Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I am Janine Vosper, your host. And today with me, I've got Pat Armistead. Now, Pat is a pioneer and thought leader in the area of joy as a transformational agent. Even just reading that sentence sounds joyful, doesn't it? From her early years as a registered nurse, she championed the human spirit, leading people to find joy where it appeared there was none. Pat's life has been devoted to helping others to transform their lives. Her unique personal perspectives, traumatic past, repeated losses, and eventual mastery as a multi-award-winning speaker, TV and radio host, and exhibiting artist are a really very rare combination of talents. A master storyteller, Pat combines positive psychology principles, emotional intelligence, and neuroscience with real human experiences to bring understanding and meaning to life events. Pat sees crisis as a catalyst for human growth and an ongoing transformation, enabling high levels of intimate communication and authentic expression. Wow, Pat, that just is so, I don't know, reading that going, oh, there's that point I want to talk about. Such, I'm sure there's so many interesting stories there. But just, you know, looking at that, it's a joyologist. Have I got the terminology correct?
A self-coined term. There are now several around the world, but to my knowledge, I was the first. There was nobody online claiming that space in 2001. So, yes, I was the world's first, and as such, there was no such thing. And my biggest mission, as you might imagine, is, all right, I've been given this idea, now what? So, you know, And I'd actually been moving through a period of a series of losses and opted not to be medicated, wanted to find another way. Working intuitively, a series of events, paradox and synchronicity, and the name came to me. So it's been very much, I quite like the word pioneering. There's, you know, some real spirit in that. And when I look back and I think, how did I do this? You know, really, the world was so not ready for the business world, especially for a joyologist. And yet come now to 2019 and, you know, I've done over 1,000 keynotes and so many varied programs throughout that period of time, been acknowledged in so many ways. And the for me, it's become finding full self-expression, even though current circumstances and current reality are saying, you're what? Who are you kidding? So being able to work in the face of what I call no agreement to bring things to life and to, finding, being able to see the joy when it appears there's none. So making that big shift in perceptions has been a very big part of that.
Okay. And you just mentioned in the face of no agreement. What does that mean?
Well, you know, when I put a stake in the ground to, you know, claim the space as a joyologist, I was part of the National Speakers Association in New Zealand, eventually became president. And there were probably 40 or 50 people in the membership, and there wouldn't have been one who said, this is amazing, love to support you. All the feedback was, it's never going to happen, Pat.
And don't you love that? And then what do you do, Pat?
Oh, well, that's not the right sentence to be saying to me.
No.
And I remember speaking to a social worker in the early period when I was still evolving and developing. I talked to a social worker at Auckland's Starship Hospital, and a delightful man, and he said, Pat, I love what you're doing. He said, but it's never going to happen. One of my visions was to have a geology department in every hospital and a department of human resources in every business. And he said to me, it's never going to happen. And it was probably that sentence that was the biggie for the resolve. I talked to so many health practitioners, so many other people in business, getting people's handle on this is what's happened, this is where I am, I want to develop and evolve this. What do you think? And the breakthrough came when I thought, all right, I need to get clever. I was actually broke following those losses I was talking about. And I thought, so, all right, I'm going to get published every month. I'm going to get really clever around that. And I need to find myself an extraordinary mentor. And I ended up being led along to find Mike Hutchison, who was then the MD of Saatchi & Saatchi Auckland. And 5 minutes into the conversation with him, he said, Pat, they told Disney he'd never make any money out of making people laugh. And I asked him two questions, you know, will you support me to evolve this and help me find, will you be my mentor and will you help me evolve this? And within 5 minutes, he said yes and yes.
Oh, isn't that brilliant?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So, when things flow like that, and even though you're coming across naysayers, and well, I call them dream stealers actually, but when you come across dream stealers sort of putting up barriers towards you, but then things keep flowing, and then the right people who are the people that probably can lead you in the best way, and as you said, mentor you in the best way as well, then when they present themselves and are in agreement that what you're doing is needed to be done, that's when you know you're on the right track, isn't it?
Yes. And the, you know, nowadays I still get no's, but nowadays I'm able to position that as a firm maybe and, you know, really make light of that. And energetically something can come beyond that. You know, invariably people just need to have a longer conversation. They need more information. They need to be better informed. They need to get past the barrier of the name. For a long time, that was a bit of a barrier. But once I had really identified my IP and drawn things together, which took two and a half years, then I was in a position to you know, up until then I was experimenting, and from that point on it just grew. And another 2 years later, since 2006, I've been working full-time doing what I'm doing.
That's and doing what you love,
yes.
Obviously, as well. That makes a difference, doesn't it? So we've sort of stepped ahead here, but then we've talked about, you know, there were incidences in your life. So do you want to share a little bit more about yourself? And because I think with most people, and you probably will tell us this anyway, but there's some sort of turning point. There's something where you things keep happening and then you go, that's not working, and finding a different way to approach things as well.
Yes.
So how did, so tell us a little bit more about Pat.
Well, probably at the outset, I excelled at art at school 100%, and so would have loved to have gone to university and done a degree. And my mother said to me, well, look, that's lovely, dear. Your paintings are awful and are awesome and your father frames everything, but I really think you should get a proper job. And so it was that I went nursing. And I ended up loving it, so that's perfectly fine. But it was the, there were many experiences throughout my nursing that served me through to this day, but there was one man in particular, the very first man that I ever bedbathed, a man by the name of Bob Hall. And a construction crane had fallen on Bob. He'd been in hospital about 3 months when I met him. And it had literally crushed him. He had 35 broken bones, and when he'd first come in, they said, he's not going to make it. And he was still alive 4 hours later, and at that point they said, well, maybe we'll risk taking him to theatre, but they were a bit worried that he'd die on the table. But he went to theatre and he didn't die on the table, and as they're ferrying him back to intensive care, the conversation shifted and they said, well, you know, poor beggar, he'll probably be a vegetable. So Bob woke up in recovery and revealed very quickly that he was not indeed a vegetable. And the conversation changed again with the medical team and they said, well, he'll never walk again. So Bob Hall was in hospital the whole 3 years of my general nurse training. And I saw Bob Hall every single day I was on duty, whether I was rostered on his floor or not. And passage of 3 years, he walked on two sticks to my graduation ceremony and stood up the back. And at the end of the ceremony proper, he raised one of those sticks and waved it a bit and said, I'd actually like to say something. And by now I'm getting a bit scared because my mother's sitting in the front row and I have a bit of an idea about what Bob's going to talk about. And he came forward and he had this big scroll. It was about 3 feet long. And he started
That's a threat
reading.
In itself.
Yes. He starts reading off all the tricks and pranks and terrible things that I did to him over that three-year period.
Mm.
And every now and again, my poor mother, and she'd go, oh, Patricia, you didn't. And I'd go, oh, yes, Mom, sorry. And at the end, he turned to me and just looked me straight in the eye and he said, you don't know what you did. And the point of sharing that is it really wasn't until 2001 that I got it.
Right.
That I really got the depth of that.
And do you think it, obviously you used humour and did a lot of those things, but do you think just treating him like a person and not a patient as well?
Oh, absolutely. And look, my own innate ability to be good-humoured, to be the imp and to do it in the, you know, you're not meant to really muck around too much while you're nursing. It's pretty serious business. Mm-hmm. You don't want your nurse getting too creative with what's going on. I spend a lot of time in matron's office, actually, in trouble. But in the face, yeah, you know, in the face of that, I continued to, you know, nowadays you talk about, you know, shifting states and things. I didn't know I was doing that, but I arrived every day doing something that lifted his spirits in one way or another. Either laughing or shocked. I didn't realize it, but I had the courage to do it. Like I didn't know I was using courage, but I was.
Okay.
And then 2001, I just really got it. Yes, my natural impish self, influenced by life at that point, just showed up for this man. Yeah. And I really got the how persistent I can be, how committed I could be. I saw him every day.
Yeah.
So even when I wasn't on his floor, something told me, directed me, I had to see this man every day, and I did.
Yeah. Yeah, and going to that obviously, again, it's that driving to do something that is inspiring you and working with somebody else as well. And you've had some big losses in your life, haven't you? So those things, and even just, you know, people saying you're not good at something or you can't do it. I mean, we understand now that that does affect people for a very long time. But so the things that you've had happen have been quite significant.
Yes, I lost I lost my first child, a daughter. She was stillborn, and there were lots of complications with the delivery. And they asked me, would I like to nurse her? And I couldn't. Okay. At the time, I felt if I hold her, I can't be with that pain. I was already experiencing the pain of it, but just to embrace that was something I couldn't do. And so I never held her. She was buried as baby Armitstead. And I never felt bad about that. It was all perfectly okay at the time. And I had my time of grieving. But 2001, at the peak of when all of the other successive losses happened, that's when I really realized, oh my God, I didn't give her a name. And, you know, I'd learned a lot in the ensuing years, and, you know, we can go back and do some healing. And so a friend who was a marriage celebrant, she said, oh, Pat, she said, I can do a naming ceremony for you. And okay. To that naming ceremony, I invited all the people who loved me, obviously, but also those who seemed to be sitting on the fence sometimes. I thought, well, this will be the test. And it was the most extraordinary day. I called her Willow, and it just has created the deepest inner peace all these years on around what's probably the biggest loss for a woman, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Losing a child is. Yes. I can't imagine how that would feel. And things were different, you know. So that's quite a long time ago, too, isn't it? So things were very different in those days than they are now. Realizing what needs to happen now, as opposed to what they thought was best for you in those days. Also.
You know, I went back to work very quickly, and I think that was a good thing. I was able to invest as I healed others. I was healing myself, you know, doing that nursing. And the just present to people in a way that I hadn't been before that. You know, I'd been pretty good nurse, I think, up until that point. But that shifted a lot. It's like you just get a real sense of all the depth of all the different kinds of losses. And, you know, the loss of body function is huge. It's huge. So, you know, I just got another level of understanding back then around those kinds of things. And bringing it forward to now, I so have a very different understanding of grief, you know, where it's a natural expression and we're meant to experience it. I don't believe we're meant to suffer, and I think we've been taught suffering by what we've been taught around grief and how we should behave when we're having grief.
Yeah, it's an unknown until you're in it. I mean, you had a lot of other – I interviewed a lady a while ago, and she's an expert on PTSD. And, I mean, looking at the things that happened to you, you know, losing your home and business a couple of times and owing money and then having cancer and having interruptions with your family as well, where you may get support and violent relationship. I even know that you've said that you had 10 car accidents in 18 months. I had 5 in a year and then eventually sold the car because I was thought it was the car. But that you win. That was 10 of those. And then having your partner leave for someone else as well. I mean, all of those things cause trauma and drama and PTSD is it's not, you don't have to be in war to have that occur either. So, you know, to be able to be the joyologist is quite amazing. I mean, what makes that? What gives? I know we've talked about it being your direction and your belief and not just passion. It's your life to do that. But how do we do it? Because there's a lot of people out there suffering different forms of anxiety and depression and stress as well.
Yes. One of the things that I can see now is I didn't learn about joy by studying joy. I learned about joy through my experience of shame, grief, and embarrassment. Okay. My first relationship was a violent relationship, and I never told anybody. I started to tell my mother once and asked her to come. And she said, it's not really convenient. We're going to your sister's today. Your sister's having James today. And so I never told her. And, you know, I see how I never told anyone for 30 years. It was only very recently that I shared that.
And holding on to that as well.
I mean, it's hideous. You know, I have dreadful arthritic changes. That came on very, very suddenly. I had about 5 years' worth of arthritic change happen in about 6 months. And, you know, every emotion that we feel, if it's not released, it's stored in the body. There's a lot of work by Candace Pert. She was a foundational leader into this science and biology, pathophysiology. But there's a lot of science now that backs up. We need to be expressing all of our emotions, otherwise it's going to be stored and it'll ultimately result in disease somewhere.
Yes, I'm a big believer in that we create dis-ease in our body. We have dis-ease and then we create disease as well. Inflammation is a very common manifestation because the body is inflamed in different ways, isn't it? So overcoming shame, grief, and embarrassment. I mean, they're big words and they're big emotions.
Yes, the one of the commitments I made around about the same time that I met Mike Hutchison was whatever comes up now. Well, we'll just go back a few months. The last sentence that my ex said to me, my second partner, when he left with the other lady, was, "No, I don't love you, and I never loved you." So in that moment, I thought, if that's the truth, then everything I've ever known is not true. And so I disintegrated. So it was a really messy 3 month period. And I had an ordinary doctor who was brilliant. But she wanted to medicate me, and I kept saying to her, "Help me deal with my grief. You know, for goodness sake, look at all this stuff, and I've coped and coped and coped, but we're done now." And so she wasn't the answer, and I left her practice and went looking for something else, and I found an integrated medical practitioner. Who has through to now only ever wanted to know my story. My first consult with him was 90 minutes, and at the end of that time he got his guitar out and sang me a song.
Really? That's amazing.
Extraordinary. I heard about a grieving seminar that was on at Starship Hospital, the children's hospital in Auckland. And one of the physicians who had worked with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you may have heard of her, he was there to support parents who had lost children to be creating their own groups once they leave the embrace of Starship and are back in their communities. So I go to this seminar and there are 400 people in the room who've lost or are losing children. So the energy was just thick and palpable, just anguish and despair. in the room, and I sat next to a couple who I think at this period, without necessarily intention, I was really present to everything. So this couple I sat next to, she just sat bolt upright, never moved through the whole 2 hours. He, on the other hand, he was immediately next to me on my left. He rocked, he hugged himself. His hands had come up to his face. I could see his jaw clench and unclench. Tears would come to his eyes. And I felt his pain like I felt no one else's pain ever before. All those years nursing, there were lots of horrific stories, but nothing matched my personal experience of his pain. And at the end of the session, he went outside and I followed him. I'm that kind of girl, you see. And I said, clearly you're hurting big time. I said, would you like to talk? And so we chatted for a little time and he shared his story. And his 14-year-old son had fallen accidentally from the inside of a cinema, falling several floors and dying as a result of that fall. And he said, you've seen my wife. She's been like that ever since. She's like catatonic. We've got 2 children at home. I'm a bloke. I don't know how to handle myself, let alone manage this. And I treasure that moment to this day because it's like, for goodness sake, that man didn't know me.
Yeah.
And look at what he revealed.
Yeah.
What happened then? You know, that was such intimate communion. And it was there because we were sensing each other. We were connected somewhere beyond, you know, it wasn't a phone call. And then I went home that night and checked my mail, and I had an email from a magician in South Australia who was inviting me to bring laughter workshops from Australia to New Zealand. So immediately I go to, you're kidding. I've just left this room, 400 people, deep anguish, and now a magician wants to talk. It's like, I've got to ring him. So I ring this man. He has me laughing my head off.
Yeah.
And he's not telling me any jokes. He's just telling me about laughter yoga. And it was in a quiet moment in that conversation that I was just gifted the vision. A voice said to me, Pat, we've got radiology, hematology, pathology, but no joyology. You're going to be a joyologist.
Oh, isn't that great? It reminds me of Patch Adams. It just,
yes.
And that was 1998, so it's sort of, you know, around that same sort of time as well.
Yes. And there's great, if you link other things, Dr. Madan Kataria invented yogic laughter in 1995. What's his name? The positive psychologist, Martin Seligman, the professor, positive psychology guru. He was the founder of this huge wave of positive psychology moving out of the depressed model for mental health. Howard Gardner creating the whole idea that we don't just have IQ, we've got many intelligences all unfolding at the same time. And, you know, I so see the perfection of all of that, and also a level of, you know, what has happened to society that we needed to create, for example, pretend laughter. Why did Madan Kataria need to go out and do that? Now there are over 8,000 laughter clubs around the world and just growing all the time. He works full time teaching people how to pretend to laugh.
So is that the base, you know, the grounding of what you do? Is that?
No.
No. I didn't think so. But it would be part of it, though? Is that?
It was the beginning.
Okay.
Because I didn't know where to go with joyology. Like for 2 weeks, I was like a dog with a bone, fretting. Well, come on, if you give me this idea, you got to give me a few more hints. And so when the laughter thing came, I thought, all right, let's get clever, Pat. What can you do with that? So long history nursing, I thought, all right, I'm going to do a pilot program using that and see what happens. So I ran a three-month program in an aged care facility, teaching the residents to laugh. And just I only have anecdotal recordings of the what happened. But the 29 residents were transformed in that time and took back their – they were previously were passive recipients, and they took back their power to energise themselves.
Mm.
It's very easy to slip into that passive recipient, do what you will, I'm done, in those kinds of environments.
Not just in those environments, but people do that when they – are in a depressive state as well, yes. Isn't it? And it becomes a yes. spiral down, yes. which is yes. just really difficult to get yeah. out of. And you can't just yeah. change your mindset, can you? That's not what you're talking about. Or it is it?
Well, the gift that I see in yogic laughter, it's not something that I don't teach it or anything now, but at the time, and I still believe and see this, The brain doesn't know the difference. So when you're doing all the yogic laughter exercises, the brain thinks, God, I'm having a good time, and you start to feel better. You know, you've got the serotonin happening and the endorphins are happening and your stress hormones are coming down, and that now has been measured in a number of tests. So there's some evidence, if we ever needed evidence. Mm. And, you know, the fact that we continue to do it is really the contrasting opposite, I think, to a lot of the depression we see, which I believe is a lot of unresolved grief. Mm-hmm. But it's allowing the body to release energy when in its depressed, flattened state, it can't.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so people go along and they do the workshops and they go every week and they become restored because some of the exercises are so silly. You are doing pretend laughter, but you end up laughing for real.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it can be a very positive and useful pathway back to managing your state.
Mm. So other than laughter, what other sort of things can people do to just shift their space? I suppose is a word. You'd probably say something else, but to shift them from one moment in space to another that's going to feel more joyful for them.
You know, I think one of the gifts I got from Anthony Robbins, you know, he says emotions – is the energy that comes from motion. So, you know, I work alone, so if I'm here for a day and don't get to talk to anyone much, I can be a bit flat. So in order to lift myself, I've got to get up and get moving. And I do this routine when I open a keynote to Celine Dion's song, I Am Alive. So I get up and do that.
Okay.
So we've got to get into motion.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I think one of the biggest things is the gift of having a mentor or a guide or a coach or a group. We need that support network, especially at this time, because we can't always be spurred to do the thing. So we need reminders. And, you know, part of how I've been working all this since 2001 is because of my innate capacity to be good humoured, because of how I've been that daring do person before, that naturally slips into this really easily. And I look to break patterns. I've studied NLP, and that's been extremely useful, and other methodologies that help with being able to, you know, have processes to help people shift. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the biggest thing for myself, funny as it sounds, is I studied improv acting
Okay.
For 4 years intensely. And improv removes the censor so that you're free to say what you'd really like to say in the first instance. Typically, we come from second or third thought, but improv takes away that censor and we can just say what's there. And that's the gift of, you know, whose line is it anyway?
I love those things. I actually love that sort of impromptu throw something at me and I'll just make up rubbish. I love that.
Yes.
And bringing humour
so
into
clever.
That as well.
Mm. And it's so, after I'd finished my first lot of training in improv, I signed up with an acting agency and, long story short, got onto this game show and I didn't know the answers to the question, but I just went with first thought, which is the first rule of improv. Mm-hmm. First thought is correct. Mm-hmm. And I had to answer 7 questions in 7 minutes. There were flames shooting up around me and I could hear my own heartbeat. Yeah. I wasn't allowed to let my heartbeat exceed a predetermined stress rate and answer 7 questions in 7 minutes without the money falling out of the tube that money was in.
Right. Okay. No pressure at all.
And I love telling this story because I just went with first thought. I got all the questions correct and I won $5,000.
How great is that?
Right.
Isn't that awesome?
Coming from first thought, we don't know what we – it's all in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we have access to it, but our censor is probably our biggest problem.
So we're blocking that. So rather than, I mean, we could call it intuition or what
yes.
name to it.
Yes.
That normal that normal first thought is usually the right one. And this is a little secret I'm going to share here on this. If I love Trivial Pursuit. I absolutely love it. I do all the quiz shows on TV from the lounge chair and my husband keeps going, how the heck do you know that? And I don't know. I just know stuff randomly put away. But if I've had a few wines, I play even better.
Yes.
Because I don't second guess myself. Yes. I just blurt the answer out. So, yeah, so it's always much more effective if I've had a few wines and play the game a lot better.
Yeah. So –
without thinking about it.
The training for improv helps you learn to do that. And also I've done a lot of ordinary acting training, street theatre training, mm-hmm. where you do the moving statue thing,
mm-hmm.
And clowning.
Oh, fantastic. So, yeah that's certainly an incredible variety of different activities within that same sort of scope. And for people that, when you're working with them, so one of the things you said is the laughter and getting motion in the body, so getting up and moving. And I love the point that you made about, particularly if you're working from home, when you haven't got other people around you, and I'm an extrovert and I believe you probably are as well, where you actually are energized by being out and around
yes.
people.
And
and I find that I need to do that and actually make a point. I walk each afternoon because, and not in the morning because I don't need it in the morning, but in the afternoon I need to lift myself up and go and do that then and have that motion and listen to the podcasts and things as I go. So I actually get out of my own world and just walk, you know.
One of the things I do with clients is Martin Seligman has the Authentic Happiness website, and one of the tests that you can do on there helps you identify your 24 signature strengths, gives you that feedback in order of priority. Mm-hmm. And I do this exercise with every client. I have them identify their multiple intelligences and take the top 3. We've got about 7 or 8, but just the top 3. And then with their signature strengths, I get them to take the top 5. And if they're working for someone else or even if they're working for themselves, it's like marry this to your job description.
Mm.
This is the element of who you are.
Mm.
Let's really get this wedded and embedded into your psyche, and we do, you know, post-it notes or whatever else you need to do to bring it to life.
Mm.
For me, it's art. I'm surrounded, even as we talk here, by I've got one thing in front of me, like a vision board that I made, just a very small one, back in 2004. And on it, it says, Pat, anything you want, you've got it. If you're confused about the choices you should take, your world is full of clues if you take the time to listen.
Good reminder.
So, yeah, and it's three-dimensional.
Yeah.
So it's not just flat. It's coming out at me.
And is that something that you work on with people as well so they create their own, or is that just something that you've done as well?
People think they're to be creative, you need to be an artist. Well, you don't. once you get clear the filter, clear the sensor, then, you know, you've got, you can tap into this expansive area. And that's the joyful thing for me. It's like I had no idea I could do that. Once I took a team of people from Coca-Cola, the people who put the drinks and into the dispensers in all the different locations.
Mm-hmm.
We kidnapped them from an event they were at, loaded them into a bus, took them to a theatre and told them in 5 hours' time they're putting on a circus. So you can imagine the resistance, men between 35 and 55. long
rubbish
story
is
short,
this. Yeah.
those who definitely didn't want to learn to stilt walk or work with fire or sticks or whatever had to create the flyer and take it to three different schools and then let the children know that there was a free circus on tonight. And the rest, over a couple of hours, learnt to do enough of any of the circus skills, and we put on a one-hour show. And
wow, okay.
There were three or four standing ovations at the end, and the man who was standing next to me, whom I still talk to in New Zealand, he turned to me crying and he said, I had no idea I could do this.
Yeah.
No
idea.
Isn't
that great? And that's one of the great things about coaching that I absolutely love as well. It's that people step out of who they are, step out of their comfort zone and extend themselves. And then when they are rewarded themselves, then we are rewarded as coaches because we see that achievement within themselves and that shining light that happens, that they not acknowledge that they've got some skill that they didn't realize that they have an ability and have confidence in themselves. I love it too. And it's one of the best parts of being a coach, isn't it? It's that joy you get from people achieving and changing the way they their perception on stuff too. Yeah.
And when we're in a confident enough space, I think, where then you and I or anyone else who's a coach can we can afford to be cheeky, to push the buttons, to say what someone less self-assured might not say in order to have people see something different. Like Patch Adams' mother is a diabetic and she had one of her limbs removed due to poor circulation. And right. Patch was there as she woke up, patting her hand, and in his big booming voice as her eyelids fluttered open, he said, "Well, Ma, now you know what it's like to have one foot in the grave." only Patch could say that to his mother.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
But it does. It does. That's awesome. I absolutely love that. Look, I know my mum has passed away or 13, so what's that, 6 years ago now. But she'd had spent some time in hospital with blood disorders and things, and she'd lost a leg, but she got really ill this one time, and we were all called there, and then I've gone to visit the next day, and she's not in ICU, and you're thinking the worst, and anyway, she's gone up the ward, she's sitting up, she's having breakfast, and she's just, oh my God, we can't even kill you with a stick, can we? You know, and it just broke all the tension from all the family that were standing around. It does. Humor is. Yeah, you can't put enough value on bringing humour to a situation, can you?
No. I presented last year about 20 presentations around the country to a very big business, 26,000 staff. And, you know, each time there would be in the room the funny man in the group and often the others, because it was a serious subject we were talking about, would go, oi, oi, you know, and want him to tone down. And each time I said, now, wait a minute. you have to realise the value of this man and you need to harness his skill, because in the face of all that we're talking about, depression, anxiety, stress, people who might have suicidal ideation, we need this. And it doesn't always have to be a joke. It's not about that. It's about someone who has the capacity to be good-humoured. Bring something to a conversation, because they're typically a really keen listener. They're very good at listening.
Yes. I would imagine, though, that there's people that come across as, you know, the clown in the group, but are actually suffering quite a lot as well. So that you, that would be mindful of those people also. Yes. They're not just the humorist.
Yes. Yeah, many comedians, nearly all the comedians I know have a very dark side.
You just have to look at, as we've been talking about, Patch Adams with Robin Williams. That's certainly was evidence there as well. And so now, looking for some ideas and tips and just, you know, a few points that we can take away with us as well. I know we've covered those three main points that I think are really, really valuable for people who are looking to bring more joy in their life, is just to laugh at things. Oh, gosh, my husband comes out with the most stupid things. And he doesn't realize they're stupid until he says it. And he wasn't allowed to give speech at my son's wedding. I was the MC and also gave our speech, because my daughter-in-law banned him because he doesn't do it from a cruel point of view. He just doesn't get it that he's said something. Anyway, he said something that was really inappropriate. It was just, he said totally the wrong words. And I lost it. I couldn't stop laughing. You know when you get to that laughter where tears are running, and I could not stop. And I tried it, then it'd start again. It went on for probably about 3 or 4 minutes, and I just could not stop laughing. And it felt great. It felt really, really good to do that. I haven't done that for quite a while. But everyone else starts laughing then, because it laughed.
Yes. I saw it recently. There was a chap on a train who was pretending to watch something on his iPhone.
I saw that. It was awesome, wasn't it? And everyone on the train started laughing with him. Yeah, that was brilliant. It was, very brave for him doing it, that in a public situation. Yeah.
It's just awesome.
And have motion as well. I love that too. You know, just if you're feeling that, get whatever is your motion. And you said you sing, and I know I've got one of the ladies I interviewed, she dances. She just go out in the yard and dance around.
And you know, one of the things, I love the Dalai Lama, and I forget the name of the verse, but there's a mantra that's part of his practice, and he says, if you wish to know love, then provide love for another. If you wish to know peace, provide peace for another. And it goes on. So I think this too, you know, we're not just an internal machine. You know, we do need to do a lot of inner work to heal old hurts. But in the same breath, when we minister to somebody else, as we heal them, we heal ourselves. You know, I hark back to that man who lost his 14-year-old son. He's been in my consciousness ever since. So, you know, every time we're in a really good space, oxytocin pours out of the frontal cortex of the brain. So you and I have been pouring oxytocin through this conversation. And, you know, it's going out into the ether. We can't see it, but we're increasingly getting messages that let us know that A is something more than something happening beyond what I can actually see, but I know it's working.
Yeah, yeah, and it does. It leaves you with that high feeling as well.
Yes.
And just quickly finishing for the next couple of minutes, some takeaways other than what the other one I wrote down for myself was creative expression too, however that is. I think that's brilliant. But just three takeaways that you want to add before we finish up.
Yeah, another one that I haven't mentioned and I'll mention it now is journaling is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to pour your heart out onto the page is to free your mind and free your body. Mm-hmm. And first thing in the morning is a really good time to do that. It's like tidying up your table before you sit at it to work. It clears the space and gives you some freedom. One of my continued sayings is, you know, whatever comes up, go to it. Don't avoid things. Mm-hmm. If you can't find a way to express or deal with it, deal to it, then ask somebody to help. And 2001 again, I've been sending three pieces of what I call glad mail every day, honouring, okay, celebrating, congratulating what I see in others. I give it out at conferences. I give them out in workshops. And I write them all stream of consciousness the night before, having asked spirit, what do people need to know? What do people need to hear from me? And so what should I say? And it's always, I've sent now to be over 15,000 pieces of mail. So one by one, and it's cost me 50 cents a dollar for a card. One by one, we start to recognize and not acknowledge just in the smallest way. And people don't forget. I've been giving conference organizers a bucket and spade for every conference since about 2014 probably. And I had one lady from New Zealand ring me just recently, just before Christmas, and she said, I had to find you. She said, I've still got my bucket and spade.
Oh, isn't that great? That's awesome.
I keep jokes in it. So, you know, tokens, you know, get, I have a laughter icon. My laughter icon is a puppet called Doubting Thomas. So it's a reminder of my default setting and where I go to when I'm in that doubting space. Mm-hmm. But I make fun of it by merit of the puppet. Mm. So, you know, really it's about applying a higher level of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's just shifting things that you just wouldn't be normally thinking of doing and shifting that over. I love the idea of the glad mail and the gifts and that. I remember I was part of I used to do circle work, and we would finish the circle with all of us gifting words of praise and expression to each other at the end of the session, and it was just amazing. You'd walk out feeling that you're on a cloud nine because you just felt so empowered, so loved, and so valued. It's a great way to feel.
Yeah. I know how wounded I was by my partner's words, "No, I never loved you." And so language has been so important to me all these ensuing years, to be really mindful of my language. I want my language to be a balm, to not hurt.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, that's important, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's just, I love that idea of the glad mail. It's certainly, and I'll be traveling soon, so I'm looking for little things, light things, because all the internal flights are only 20 kilo, but things that are just a little bit unique from, and bringing back for people that I know are encourages you know, people who
and,
support
you know creating
well.
Things that are a signature of you and you know finding your multiple strengths, finding your multiple intelligences, doing, you know, there's lots of personality profiling, other things you can be doing to find out more about you And in that, you can find some joyful expression because it's like, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That site that you mentioned, is that just an open site? You said Martin?
Martin Seligman, yes. It's I think it's just authentichappiness.com.
Okay.
And there are there's a multitude of resources on there, plus a whole raft of questionnaires. The one I was referring to is the VIA Signature Strengths.
I think I've done something like that before, but yeah, I always find those interesting as well. And that's great. Anything that you want to add that you want people to, how can they get in touch with you, Pat?
My website is still under the New Zealand banner, so it's joyology.co.nz. And for people in Australia, if they wanted to have a phone call, it's 0487 105 785. And I have a presence on Facebook and LinkedIn as well under my name.
And you've got some books and workshops and that. I imagine that's all on your workshop, all on your website as well.
Yes. And if anyone, you know, is curious as a result of this conversation and would like to have a chat, you know, I'm really happy to have a half-hour session and, you know, explore where they're at and, yeah, see what they're up to, either in their own lives or in their business.
No, that sounds awesome. I really appreciate that you're speaking with us today and sharing that information. And it's, you know, I think even just something, if people can get just the thing out of it that they don't necessarily have to feel the way they're going to feel forever, you know, that there's opportunity to come out of what they're feeling and move into a different space, no matter what their circumstances.
Yeah. And, you know, I use the term joyful empowerment because it is that curious mix of like the monarch coming out of its cocoon. We have to go through the struggle in order to emerge fully mobilized.
Yeah.
If somebody snips that cocoon and breaks it, the monarch won't live.
No.
It will die.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. Yeah. So thank you very much, Pat. So if anyone wants to get in touch with Pat, it's joyology.co.nz, and her phone number here is in Australia. It's 0487 105 785. Thank you, Pat. I really have appreciated that. Lots of great value in that, and I've enjoyed our conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Most welcome. And that is another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I'm Janine Vosper, your host. Please remember to get in touch with me at info@speechperfect.com.au or janinevosper.com. And it's got lots of different stuff on there, workshops and books. And just give me an email and just let me know how you're going and what you're finding of interesting with the podcasts. And also please leave a 5-star review. That'd be excellent. I always forget to add that, and I've been remembering to do that of late. So thank you, and I will be back with you on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Bye-bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.